Welcome to the Zandbergen Report, where wealth strategies and investment wisdom collide, featuring your distinguished host and certified financial planner, Bart Zandbergen.
Welcome to the Zandbergen Report, a showcase for wealth strategies and investment wisdom that's essential for our evolving world. I'm your host today, Bart Zandbergen. In studio, my partner in crime, Letitia Birbaum, who we just recently found out is on fire today.
Is that what we're calling it? Oh, okay.
And as usual, we have Paul in studio.
Yes.
Paul, welcome.
And I don't know if you can hear those noises outside, but there's a lot of construction going on around here because we're going to talk about constructing a portfolio.
Woo-hoo!
Wow, good one, Paul. And Paul, we're so sorry for the pre-show conversation, which I'm letting you have it.
Which basically said, shut up.
I'm like, hey, listen, we've got compliance. We need to be compliance friendly today.
We don't
today.
Want you to say anything dumb today. More than usual, right?
We enjoy you, Paul.
Well, we are super excited to be here today, and the topic has come up. Letitia and I have spent the last 6-9 months asking people, interviewing people, hey, what's of interest to you? What do you want to hear? And very often it comes up, we don't even know what like portfolio construction is, how you do it, how you pick your investments. So we're within the...
I know you need a jackhammer to do mine. That's the only thing I know.
You're great.
So within the confines of what we're allowed to say in public from via compliance, we are going to do our best to describe what portfolio construction is all about.
Yeah.
So let's start with maybe the different type of investor advisor type, and then we'll kind of work our way down because that's kind of the funnel, if you will.
Okay.
So, Letitia, you want to help share with the audience the different advisor types between like wirehouse, brokerage, independent, RIA?
Yeah, that's a great question. So if you were going to go online and go to Google, which I do all the time, and you want to find out financial advisor or wealth manager, what's the first thing that pops up and how do you understand what's the right person you need to work with? So you're going to get a lot of different types and you're going to have a lot of people come at you and you're trying to figure that out. So you might have a wirehouse that might be, let's say, your...
Like your bank.
Right, your bank.
Wells Fargo, mm-hmm. Bank of America.
Mm-hmm. And then you're going to have a brokerage. So in my past, a brokerage account would be like LPL Financial, and then they have brokerage accounts. So that would have a combination of different type of investments they use there. And then you also have independent, and that is you could be directly independent or an RIA. So there's three different major types that you can go to choose from.
Right. And so let's break that down a little bit further. So the RIA, or registered investment advisor, has a fiduciary responsibility mm-hmm. for their clients. That means they're working on their client's best interest.
Right.
And I know for
that's what we are.
That's what we are. That's been my entire career.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not here to say one is better than the other. We're just defining by what regulations and law say.
Correct.
And then a brokerage is brokers work for a brokerage. And while I'm sure 99% of the time they're working in their client's best interest, they do not have a mandate to do so because they're getting primarily compensated on the trades versus, which in most RIAs is based on a fee basis.
So it could be a combination. It could be a commission and
could be.
Fee-based.
Exactly. And then the wirehouses, those, the big ones would be like Merrill Lynch, Wells Fargo, UBS. Again, nothing. I don't know that. I think it's personal preference and mm-hmm. what you're more comfortable in working with.
So it's usually associated with the banks.
Associated with the banks, and usually products. Mm-hmm. The wirehouses usually have their own products.
Yeah. Products mean? Can you explain what that is?
Like maybe their own branded mutual fund, mm-hmm. like a Merrill Lynch mutual fund, a Wells mm-hmm. Fargo mutual fund, mm-hmm. versus an independent. Like us, who don't, there is not an Optivest mutual fund, there's not a Letitia Birbaum mutual fund, there's not
Correct.
A Paul mutual fund.
Right.
We just choose from all of the available non-proprietary choices.
Right.
When it comes to funds. And there's also ETFs and there's stocks, and we're going to get into that. I think another decision factor, and I think where there is some confusion, is what's a financial advisor, what's a wealth advisor, what's a certified financial planner, or CFP. Sadly, in today, almost anyone can call themselves a financial advisor. A CPA could be a financial advisor. A life insurance salesman can be a financial advisor.
Mm-hmm.
Paul could call himself a financial advisor if he really wanted to.
I am. I'm an advisor for everything, all things.
See.
But in order to call yourself a certified financial planner, that means you've gone through the proper training mm-hmm. and passed tests and received the designation, much like, I would say, a CPA or an attorney.
Mm-hmm.
That also requires continuing education. So I think it's the listener should be just informed that if someone says they're an advisor, a financial advisor, maybe to dig down at one more level to see what
certifications are and all the initials they have behind their name. And then, like you said, but even looking at those and uncovering what do those mean and ask them those questions, because like you said, maybe they call themselves a financial advisor and then it's a designation associated with insurance and they're telling them about their wealth or their financial portfolio.
Right.
So you really need to understand what those designations mean and how they're associated with your portfolio or what your needs are.
Exactly. While CFP is the kind of the accepted financial planning designation,
mm-hmm.
As we know, there's the CLU, there's the mm-hmm. CHFC, which are great designations, but they're definitely life insurance-based.
You got to define what those are. You got to throw out all the initials.
So CHFC, Chartered Financial Consultant, CLU, Chartered Life Underwriter. Again, very, very intensive designations, but definitely life insurance-based. Anything else that you think I missed on the at that level before we dive
into
investments?
No, I think that's great. Yeah.
Okay, good. All right, so let's look now at more portfolio construction. I think we'll start at the top and try to work our way down and define as we go down. So Letitia and I were talking about this, and it's that for years and years and years, the classic asset allocation for a quote-unquote diversified portfolio is a 60-40.
All right. What is a 60-40? You want to explain what that actually is?
I was getting there, and actually I was waiting for Paul to jump in and make me define.
He gave me such a dirty look the last time I made him define something.
So a classic 60-40 means 60% stocks, 40% bonds.
Okay, what's a stock and what's a bond?
Okay, you're going to go there.
Well, then I'll explain it. A stock
means
you own the company, and a bond means you're lending money to the company.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly right. So, but I think I want to step further. You own a piece of the company. You may
Correct.
Have a share.
You know, you're laughing at that, but I've never heard that, and that is so insightful. I've never heard of it described
Thanks,
that
Paul.
Way. Right? No. Because I'd be one of those who go, I know what a stock and bond is. I'm not sure I really knew what it was.
Yeah.
So
ownership,
older.
Ownership versus loanership.
Wow, we're full of them today here. I like the ownership versus loanership.
We're both on fire.
So, and I, as I started thinking about this and preparing for the show as well, I thought back to my early days in the business when I got in the early 90s, and our standard allocation was like 80-20, 80% stocks, 20% bonds, 90-10, 90% stocks, 10% bonds. And if we didn't earn at least 20% a year, basically we got fired. Those were kind of the heyday.
But all of these allocations depend on your risk level and your tolerance.
Correct.
And there's a lot of information that we take in behind the scenes to be able to determine what allocation is right for you. So like we're referencing a 60-40 as a standard. A standard is really it's just a general term because at the end of the day, we make it very specific on where you are in your life and your risk and your level.
Exactly. And let's just make sure we're clear here. We're not making recommendations. We're not saying this is mm-hmm. the allocation. We're saying what has typically been the classic. And we think things have changed because we certainly use history and mm-hmm. historic information to mm-hmm. help us with our decisions. But let's just kind of lay the facts out here. So I mentioned in the early 90s, and since then we've had a declining interest rate. Interest rates have been falling really for the last 35 years,
mm-hmm.
which is a particular economic environment.
Mm-hmm.
We've had inflation that has been falling and has been pretty flat for quite some time.
Mm-hmm.
And not until about 2 years ago have things kind of turned around. We've seen interest rates kind of hit the bottom.
Yep.
Inflation start to, I don't know, creep up ever so slightly.
Slightly.
So as some advisors, and I'll say as we have done, we have changed the construction of our portfolios and kind of gone away from the 60-40. I'll mention the asset classes. The percent in each, of course, is going to depend on our individual conversations with the clients, understanding their risk, et cetera, et cetera. But instead of the two general asset classes, and we'll dive down into each asset class with more detail, of stocks and bonds or fixed income, as you know, we have added real assets, and mm-hmm. we've also added alternative investments.
In case you know what I'm going to ask.
So what's the next question, Letitia?
Please define those. What does that mean for an investor?
So I think I know what it means. It means more diversification, and it also means being prepared for what could happen and what we're starting to see happen, which is interest rates rising and inflation starting to appear. The real assets is an asset class or a category, and the assets that would typically fall in there would be commodities, hard assets like gold and silver, platinum, natural resources like oil, and then the all-important real estate.
So what you're saying is these asset classes is just a portion of their portfolio. It's not just the stocks and the bonds. This
of course.
Is a piece of the portfolio.
Right.
Okay.
So we call them, as you know, we call them sleeves. We have different sleeves, and the size of the sleeve is determined by clients, I'll say it again, their risk profile, the number of years they either have until retirement and or how much years they have in retirement.
Okay, and what's the other asset class that you're referencing?
So a very wonderful world called alternatives or alternative investments.
Okay.
So definition of alternatives, you ready for this?
I'm ready.
Not a stock, not a bond, not real estate.
Woohoo! Okay, what are some examples of that?
So I think different firms may have different definitions, but generally speaking, again, if it's not stock, not bond, so we might use, and I know you're going to ask what these all are, so just so you know, we're going to get to define them, but private equity, hedge funds, absolute return, long short, market neutral, life settlement funds. Each of those are either, and I'm going to use some really technical investment terms, they're either non-correlated to the stock market and or are either non-correlated or negatively correlated.
So these are the reasons why you would have these funds in your portfolio. And what do those mean?
Right. So, Paul, what is non-correlated?
Well, I'm going to cheat because I'll give a little plug here. We do have a show specifically on alternative investment strategy. So I actually kind of know what it means. As the stock, it's not tied to it. So as the stock market goes up, these might not move in sync with it. They're correlated. They're non-correlated, right?
That's really good.
Very good,
That's
Paul.
Really good.
All right.
So if the market goes up or goes down, these investments are not as affected of the ups and downs. That's the theory behind it.
So I throw out two terms, and they have different definitions. There's non-correlated and there's negatively correlated. So non-correlated, I'm going to follow up with Paul. That's investment that I'll use the example, marches to the beat of its own drummer.
Yep.
Doesn't matter what stocks do, doesn't matter what bonds do, does its own thing. Here's a perfect example. I'll just leave it with that. Life settlement hedge fund. So next question was a life settlement.
Right.
So this is a fund, a hedge fund, that owns, that buys other people's life insurance policies and then makes an investment out of it. I'll leave it very general. But if you think about it, what do life insurance policies have to do with stocks or bonds?
Absolutely nothing.
So the stock market could be going crazy. I'm not saying that there are always going to be a great return on the life settlements, but it has nothing to do with the stock market and the bond market.
Yeah.
You mention one of the other things here? Why was the split? I know the answer, I think. But stocks and bonds are supposed to move in opposite directions, right?
Theoretically.
Theoretically, right. I mean, that was the original intent, so that if the stocks come down, then bonds go up. If bonds go down, then stocks go up, was the theory when they came up with these asset allocation models. And now you're saying that it's more complicated than that.
It's more complicated. The times have changed. I don't know how detail we'll get into that, but we have a rising interest rate environment that's affecting bonds negatively. I'll answer that by also defining negatively correlated. So negatively correlated, if two assets are perfectly negatively correlated, that means it's a one for one. If stocks go up 10, the negatively correlated asset, if it's perfectly, will go down 10%. That's a perfect negative correlation. Most assets, of course, are not going to have a perfect one-to-one.
Right.
So there's degrees. So if there's a degree of, so stocks may go up 10%, and then maybe this asset goes down 2% or 3%. But then also conversely, right? So the reason you would have these assets is for what we are experiencing today is a considerable stock market volatility that will have some of these assets that will not dollar or percent for percent go up, but have some degree of different direction of the stock market.
Right. And this is the whole reason why you diversify, because you can't necessarily predict what's going on in the market, and then you're evenly across the board.
That is, I believe, to be exactly true. I know you do. There are the few out there that espouse that they know which direction the market is going. To date, I haven't found anyone that has done so successfully time and time again.
Consistently forever.
I always say that even a stopped clock is right twice a day. So everything someone might get lucky. But, I mean, some of the best minds in the world that have ever lived with regards to investing have said there's no way you can consistently do it. And I'm going to go one cliche after another. It's time in the market, not timing, that's going to create success.
Yeah. I'm going to go back to the timing question later, if you can continue with the allocation.
Can I ask you just one question? Because I listened to this other show, and I wonder, they talk about is alternatives. They don't talk about stocks. They don't talk about bonds or real estate. They talk about other alternative invest strategies. And you just said there's a million of them, far more than I ever anticipated. Long, short, hedge fund kind of ideas, things hedging against some downturn in the stock market.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Why don't they ever get discussed or talked about? Is it because they're relatively new? Is it because the old model used to work so well, nobody worried about it? Or is there some other thing at play? I read the Wall Street Journal, other sort of thing. I rarely hear about alternatives. It's usually stocks, bonds. That's the typical thing you read about.
So I'll let Letitia answer as well, but stocks and bonds have been around for over 100 years, mm-hmm. 150 years mm-hmm. probably, no, longer. Again, stock is an ownership in a company. So we can get into private, we can get into public, but a percentage of a company has been around forever. The alternatives, to some degree, some of them have been created to more recently to help offset mm-hmm. volatility. And without getting into a position where we're suggesting or forecasting, but we have let's just call it as we see it. We've had 10 years of a really solid stock market, mm-hmm. one of the longest bull runs in history. We've had an economic expansion, almost one of the longest in history. We now have rising interest rates. We haven't seen that. You've not seen that in your lifetime,
right.
Letitia.
Right. Just age me right there.
That changes the horizon on investments, especially in fixed income. So we are faced here with it as advisors, seeing that bonds is going to be like, this is one of our favorite terms out, is going to be like watching grass grow. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's still a safety play, but we're not going to make a bunch of money.
Yeah.
Stocks are going to be volatile, right?
Yeah.
So what else can we do? Where else can we go? So I think, Paul, that's part of the answer, is that they're certainly not as, they don't have as much tenure. They haven't been around as long. Some of them, I think, are considered debatable. I think there's advisors that will say, hey, this is either not worthy or not safe. But in portfolio construction, it's also important to know that one particular asset may be extremely risky all on its own. And you can even, you pick one, pick stock, pick gold, pick anything, mm-hmm. all by itself mm-hmm. has a lot of risk. If you start adding other assets, even mm-hmm. if they may have the perception of being more risky, mm-hmm. Helps to temper the volatility, which reduces the risk.
Yeah.
I know that seems counterintuitive, but that's, as we know, that's part of
portfolio. One other thing that they mentioned, too, they agree with you that a lot of the stuff is new. It came out of the Great Recession when people wanted more alternatives to just traditional stock and bond investments. Or real estate investments. One of the things, though, is that a lot of this was not available to ordinary investors, and now
so that was what I was going to get to.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. Go ahead then.
So not everyone has the ability to invest in alternative investments. Some of them have minimum requirements of income level and thresholds and assets that they personally have.
The typical hedge funds we always hear about.
Yeah,
right? Correct.
Yeah,
that hedged against something, right?
Yeah. So maybe they take on more risk, and because of that, there's criteria that they have to meet in order to be able to have that in their portfolio. So like what Bart was saying, maybe it's only a sliver, but they have to have enough wealth in their portfolio to be able to have that small sliver make a difference.
Take that risk, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Correct.
Yeah, one of the this is newer for us at our firm, and it's the use of private equity funds.
Mm-hmm.
And you do have to be an accredited investor, which means you have to have a certain net worth and or income in order to qualify.
Yeah.
Do you know what that is off the top, just so everybody knows? I think it's $1 million excluding your house or something like that.
Correct. Net worth and or income of
$250.
$250,
right. Yeah. And here's what I like about that, because we have personal experience with clients that have been a part of that and been very successful. This is a fund that looks for other companies that are not public, mm-hmm. that are for sale,
mm-hmm.
and the buyer, the hedge fund, will either buy the company, use it for income, put some lipstick on it, do whatever it is to create more value, and either sell it down the road,
mm-hmm.
and or bring the company public.
Mm-hmm.
And as you know, we like that as a diversification because it's public.
You're
versus
taking
private.
Advantage of public companies, right. that are also successing. You see value.
Exactly right.
Mm-hmm.
And we have personal experience with some of our clients that have been a product of that, where their company was purchased.
Yeah.
And now they're looking to sell again. And
correct.
Again, it's a longer term hold. There's not as much liquidity. It definitely has more risk. But I think that it's very possible that the reward is going to be great. And it's a different correlation to the stocks and the bonds.
And it's not meant for everyone, right? So
for
it
sure.
depends on what you are, your needs, your goals, and like we said, your risk profile that we talked about before, if it's a right fit for you.
Yeah.
So that's why, I always go back to being generic. At the end of
yeah.
the day, everyone is very unique, and we look at that individually. So we're just talking about just generalization of some of the things that we're
but
able
generally,
to
generally, you're not just putting people in a 60. Your company doesn't put people in a 60-40 stock-bond split. You're looking for other sorts of alternatives.
Correct.
To add to that
yeah.
mix, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I know we're running short on time, but there's so much that we could. You have a whole show on alts, Paul, so I know we could talk forever. But the concept of long-short, I think that's kind of interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So long-short is, in our world, if you're long a stock, that means
mm-hmm.
you own it. You're,
mm-hmm.
you're part owner.
Yeah.
If you're short a stock, that means you will make money if the value of that stock goes down.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So you're selling short.
Mm-hmm.
So there is some diversification. There's some non-correlation. There's themes.
Mm-hmm.
We know of a fund that makes a long short on, you'll love this, Paul, on driverless cars. So, and the
there's a unique niche, right?
And the concept. So this particular fund only invests in public companies, which makes it a little bit different. But they will be long companies or industries that they think at different segments of time as the progression of driverless cars goes on. So like right now, they may be long oil, which is a terrible example because the price of oil just dropped significantly. But they might be long oil. They might be long GPS.
Let's talk about dollar cost averaging. If you have a bunch of money that
you
want to
invest.
I am. You're getting too specific on products.
Right.
I don't want us to be in
right.
trouble with compliance.
So you talk about, in the last few minutes, talk about dollar cost averaging and
yeah.
how it works.
So what actually is that? Like if I give you, say, okay, Bart, here's my whole life savings. Right now, clearly we all know that the market is a little choppy out there, volatile. It goes up and down. And so what do you say? Do I throw it all in on a Tuesday afternoon, or do you suggest I do it over a period of time?
All on black.
Wrong
That's
answer.
My boy. That's it. Go big. Go home.
So dollar cost averaging is exactly what we do when clients come in right now in this volatile period with cash. And that's, we say, look, we're going to take, pick a time period, 6 months, 12 months, 24 months. And we're going to say,
yep.
we're going to take if it's over 12 months, we may take 1/12. And this month we're going to invest 1/12 of that amount. If the market has more volatility, the next time we invest, if the market is lower, well, most investors may be sad. You should be happy because we are now buying something that's on sale. If the market goes up, you can still be happy because you still have some money in the market. But we have what we call dry powder on the side so that if there is an opportunity, we have the ability to buy on a down day.
An example of this everyone should be able to relate to is a retirement plan. So if you're your company or where you work has a retirement plan, that's the same thing as dollar cost averaging. Every single paycheck, you're putting money into your retirement plan. You're buying at a specific day every single 2 weeks over the period of the year. And during that time, sometimes you're going to buy the investment at a higher price and sometimes it's lower. So over time, it's that dollar cost averaging.
Yeah. So that's by definition. So to your point, someone's doing a 401k at work, whether you know it or not, you're dollar cost averaging.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, I know that we're out of time.
We seems like so we much just more barely
got you just barely touched this here. What's the one takeaway that people should know about portfolio construction? You gave us one, which I hear a lot in this station. It isn't just as simple as a 60-40 split.
Yeah.
Most people want something more sophisticated, more active, more.
So going back to, and I'll have Bart share as well, but my takeaway, if I were to look people up, great. I look up their names, look at their designations that they have behind their names, and then also look in-house. Are their portfolios constructed in-house? Are their eyes on the actual individual investments? Are they in control with the allocation and the holdings within their portfolio? Do they have the control to be able to make changes when the market makes changes? And then how are they doing that? What does that look like? Do they have a committee that does that? Are they doing that by themselves? Or are they just kind of sitting behind the scenes and someone else is doing all of that for them? So that would be my takeaway, is making sure that your team is actively working for you, with you, and educating you in that process. And then the person that you have selected to be your advisor has the right criteria to be able to do that. That's my personal.
And Bart's takeaway is?
I can't add more to that.
Yes.
My takeaway is look into it deeper than you think, because without getting specific, you know, we've all had instances where we thought somebody was actively involved and you find out they're just taking you to lunch and farming it out to somebody else or not really looking too much at what you're doing here.
Yeah.
You want somebody that's really involved with you and understands you.
Yeah.
Hey, before we close up, Letitia, you want to tell everyone how they can either reach the podcast or reach us?
So my favorite is if you have internet access or you have, okay, I'm going to tell you, I have an iPhone, so I go on my podcast website and I go Zambergen Report, Wealth Strategies and Investment Wisdom, and you can easily Google that. You can go to Podbeam, you can go to iTunes. We're on a lot of different sources.
You're everywhere. You're all sorts of places. Yeah.
The reality is we need you to go on. We need you to download it. We need to listen. We need you to like it and share it with your friends and give us feedback. Because today's show was really inspired by people saying, okay, can you just explain some of the basics so we understand what that is?
And can I tell you one of the basics of podcasting is the way that you rank is so reliant on not just the number of people that go and listen, but the number of people who share and comment and like. Those are all huge. You had a like today on one of your shows from a week or two ago. And I'm telling you, for every one person that likes it, there's probably 1,000 others that thought of doing that but didn't.
So please do that. Otherwise, you know, we won't be able to make a difference and an impact without you guys.
Awesome. Thank you for that. Paul, thanks for your time today. And thank you to everyone who has tuned in today. We look forward to being back in studio next week. Cheers.
Tune in next week for the latest edition of the Zandbergen Report, Tuesdays at 2 p.m. Catch up on our recent shows by visiting bartzandbergen.podbean.com. The Zandbergen Report is also available on iTunes, iHeartRadio, and Spotify. Interested in being a featured guest on our show or have a question you'd like to hear us answer? Email podcast@bartzandbergen.com. Bart A. Zandbergen, CFP, and Letitia Birbaum, AIF, are registered investment advisors with Optivest, Inc., and registered representatives with Gramercy Securities, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advisory services are offered by Optivest, Inc. under SEC registration.